The Great You, the song that the Aquatones will forever be remembered for. And that's something you probably don't like to think about too much, Dave. But 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when collectors are going down their top doo-wop songs, when doo-wop songs are still being collected and preserved, you is going to be there.
I think I'm going to live forever, and so far I'm right. You know, what can I tell you?
Exactly. But there's a whole story behind you and the version that was released and the version that didn't get released. And I explained it a little bit last night on the air, and I played both versions back to back. But I'd like you, since you were there, to tell the story of you, if you don't mind.
Sure. Lou Fargo, when he was just our manager and had not started Fargo Records yet, took us into Audiosonic Studios in New York in December 1957 to cut some demo records, or dubs, as Lou called them. And we cut She's the One for Me, Light Up the Sky, and You. And on You, I can so clearly remember, Lynn had a beautiful voice, but we could never really capture that on Larry's little RCA Victor tape recorder, okay? That recording at Audiosonic was the first time we had heard Lynn in an echo chamber, and it blew us away.
Yeah.
Okay, so a month or so later, January 10th, something like that, Lou had booked the real recording session at a supposedly better studio, okay? So we did She's the One for Me. Then we get to You. And I was just singing a background. I wasn't paying that much attention. And at one point, Fargo says to the band, he says, I want to have a take with just piano and drums. So they do a take with just piano and drums. And afterwards, Fargo walks up to me and says, you know why I did that, don't you, Davey? And I said, no, Mr. Fargo, why did you do that? He says, because I'm going to release the dub. Lynn sounded better on the dub. Well, why he had to do that was at the demo session, I was playing piano, and Lou had hired, I always say, some guy off the street, who was I don't know where, to play drums, okay?
Yeah.
Neither the drummer nor I were union musicians. So it could not be known in the deep, dark secrets of nighttime, Lou Fargo. And anyway, it could not be known that Fargo released the dub version.
Yeah.
So that's why he had to have the take with just piano and drums. So if anybody is, hey, where'd that come from? Well, it was the take we did. Don't you remember? Blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
That is the story. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
So the full band version of the song hung around for quite some time.
That didn't make it onto anything until 1980, Relic Records released an LP. Lou Fargo was still alive at that time. And that is the first time I ever heard that version, other than possibly a playback in the studio the night we recorded it.
Well, let's hear it right now. Sound. Say You'll Be Mine, the Aquatones. I am very fortunate to be joined by Dave Goddard, one of the original members of the Aquatones, and still keeping the group going strong today, I should add, Dave.
Yeah, that's true.
And you have a website. It's aquatones.us.
www.aquatones.us.
Right.
Not .com, not .net, and most certainly not .gov. But
not .org?
Not .org either, no.
.us.
.us.
Let there be no confusion.
Right.
And we're going to get to one of your more recent recordings a little later on. And this is a song I really love. I've only heard it for a couple of weeks, and I really like it. So I can't wait to play that for everybody to hear. Well, something you recorded, almost 50 years, but it was more like 40 years later, 40, couple. Yeah. Of, yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But you recorded in 2001.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. But so, Say You'll Be Mine. What's the story behind that one?
Okay. I had written that song back somewhere in 57. And as I mentioned in our earlier conversation, Matt, at the time we recorded You, it was the B-side. It was the only song Lynn sang lead on then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that becomes the hit side. Okay, what do you do for an encore? So we're scurrying around trying to find material for Lynn to sing. We had rehearsed that one as a duet lead between Gene and Larry. So we said, well, let's see what it sounds like with Lynn singing lead. That's how that came about. And then the other side, Larry and I literally sat down at a piano, probably May or June of 58, very shortly before the session, and wrote the other side specifically for Lynn to sing.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That was so fine. I didn't know if you were going to play that. So I wasn't going to give you a big lead-in on that one,
Matt. We could play that one if you wanted to.
Whatever. Don't worry about it. But you had asked for the background on Say You'll Be Mine. It was a song we'd had. It was a song we'd rehearsed in a different version. Although there was, well, let's see now. Now, I guess the typical doo-wop background, I guess we didn't do that because, hey, there was just Lynn and me in the background, and the two other guys were singing duet. So other than me doing some bass riffs, all the ooh-wah-wah, hoit-hoit, and I finally, you know, somebody, no, it was one of the new group I got together, they asked me, where'd you come up with a hoit-hoit? And, I'd forgotten. And then I was driving back from Scranton, which means I was probably in the recording studio with Dick Plotkin. And I was listening to an oldie station, and lo and behold, they came on with Sincerely by the Moon Glow.
There you
and
go.
I remembered where I got hoit hoit from.
Absolutely. All right, let's play So Fine.
Why not?
You're so fine, baby. Lord have mercy. That's one sounds so good. Aquatones. It's one you don't hear every day, Dave.
No, I like that one very
much. Yeah, nice up-tempo number.
Yeah, the only up-tempo Lynn ever did.
Wow, that's saying something right there. Yeah, you know, I never really thought about that before, but that's true.
Yeah,
well, she was a good ballad singer.
Yeah.
And speaking of ballad singing,
yeah,
this next song, I mean, You's great. No question about that. But Crazy for You, wow.
Ooh.
I mean, that one shivers. Shivers.
Yeah.
And the thing about Crazy for You that I was actually explaining this a couple of nights ago on the air, promoting you coming on the show, I was telling the whole story about you know, basically the version that's been issued on CD over the years has been the wrong version. It hasn't been the 45 version of the song, which has extra voices on it.
That is correct.
It's almost blasphemous, Dave.
It borderline, I like your term.
Borderline on blasphemous, really,
all
because
right.
The extra voices, it's a fuller record. And it's still stunning. And that's the thing, is it gives me shivers. And I can't wait to play this. But what are your feelings on the fact that, you know, why do you think the 45 has been denied all these years?
Well,
how would the other one come from?
The regular
version, the Crazy for You that everyone hears today, that's not the 45 version that we're playing now.
The story that I have heard, Matt, is, okay, what happened at that session in either the end of August, the beginning of September, sorry, I forget the date, it was 1960. May I be forgiven for not remembering every detail of 48 years ago.
Shame on you.
Gene was still active duty in the Navy. So Uncle Sam took precedence over the Aquatones. Can you imagine that? And so he couldn't make the session. So in order to keep the fuller sound, Larry and I overdubbed our voices. What you normally hear all too often, and it just makes me cry, is the version before they added the overdubs, okay? And it was just Lynn, Larry, and me. And not only does it not have the extra two voices, there are parts in there that are, you know, notably some of the bass riffs that I did, that, you know, okay, those we'll do those on the overdub. Okay, no problem. All goes on the 45. So somewhere in there, some of the four songs we recorded of that session, three of them, the overdub version apparently has been lost.
Oh.
Because it has not been on, even, I believe I'm correct in saying this, even on the Relic LP of 1980. The only one of the four that I've heard all five voices on was Crazy for You. The others are lost, except for the fact that I've got the 45s, babe. So I've got my own master here, you know. But Crazy for You, doggone it, was on, it's been on records, it's been on a CD, it was erroneously listed as the alternate take on the Relic CD, and then on the version that you had, it wasn't even on there.
And no.
It's like I, as a performer, get this empty feeling listening to the three-voice version because the harmonies are so puny. There's only two of us instead of four in the background, and it's missing some of the significant parts.
It absolutely is, and you know, it's what frustrates me is as a music historian myself and sort of an archivist, you really get angry with record labels who don't just go back and do their homework. And if you don't know what you're doing, just grab the original 45s. And use that as your way of telling how the songs were originally released. You know, it's not that difficult to just grab a 45, listen to it, then go back to the masters and see what you can find that sounds just like that. You know,
and if
you can't, I say remix it. You know what I mean? If you can't get that sound, then grab what you can and remix it. Yeah, there you go. Well, let's play it right now because this is just so great. And like I said, I really, really, really love this version of the song. And here's the way it came out on 45, although this one's in stereo and the 45 obviously came out in mono. But other than that, this is exactly how it came out on 45. Here's Crazy for You. Just a regular Cadillac, because a regular Cadillac wouldn't have cut the mustard. It had to be a solid gold Cadillac.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's showing off right there. Man, that chick's demanding.
Yeah.
That great record, and what a hook with the Cadillac.
Sticks
in your head.
I kind of like that one.
Yeah. Did that one get regional airplay?
I don't recall that it did, man. I mean, problem was, you know, Fargo's in New York City, and by that time, I was upstate around the Albany-Troy, New York area, so, hey, what did I know what was going on in New York?
Why were you upstate? Were you going to school?
I was going to school up at the Rensselaer Poly, RPI.
Well, good for you for going to college and not, not thinking you were going to just be a rock star for the rest of your life.
Yeah, just think, I could have wound up like Phil Spector.
So, how many singles did Fargo put out on you guys?
Seven singles, and then that's 14 songs. Well, actually, he put out another one that we never got, weren't even aware of, in which he coupled a couple of the ballads from previous singles together. He had one come out with Say You'll Be Mine on one side and My Treasure on the other. But there were seven original singles for 14, and then that demo of Light Up the Sky that we had done in December of 57 turned up on the Fargo Records LP of 1964. Fargo added some drums, or added some guitars, I believe, to it. But so that did finally make it, but there were 15 songs that were studio recorded with the original group.
Do you have all the 45s?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Several copies?
Not in some cases. The one I have several copies of, I'm pleased to say, Matt, is the Fargo LP, which last I've been told has sold on eBay for upwards of $500.
Well,
but I have three copies, and the reason I do is dutiful son and nephew that I was. I managed to get copies from Lou Fargo not only for myself, but for my mother and an aunt of mine out in San Diego, California. Both ladies are now deceased. I was the residual beneficiary in both cases. So I am now the proud owner of 3 copies of the Fargo LP.
Well, if you ever need some extra cash. there's retirement for you right there.
There you go. Yeah. No, I've got kids and grandkids. No, they ain't going anywhere.
So, let's talk about, like, how did you go away to school, right?
Right.
Was the group pretty much, did you guys actually have an end, or was it like, oh, well, we're still kind of going as the Aquatones, but I'm going to school and whatever? Or was there a point where you guys just all said, well, you know what, we've run our course and now it's time to get on with our lives? I mean, how did that happen?
Okay. You was a hit in the spring of 58. We came out with Sayably Mine in June. I went away to school the beginning of September. Larry was going to school in New York City, Manhattan School of Music. Gene went active duty Navy in November of 58, okay? Mm-hmm. So the only one left in high school on Long Island was Lynn, okay? Fargo had several records in the can, and every 3 or 4 months he'd put out a new one. I have heard that he had a few TV appearances for Lynn, where as the lead singer she would lip sync the song, and I guess, you know, the audience could picture that there was some group higher up the street to sing background kind of a thing. But it didn't go anywhere. We weren't available to do performances. I remember we did one lip sync, record hop kind of a thing, February of 59. I don't remember. Gene probably couldn't have been there. But it was someplace on Long Island, and I came home for the weekend from college so that I could do it. But mostly we couldn't. So by the middle of 1960, Fargo had released everything he had in the can. Why did we have the last session? 4 more songs. I don't remember all the details. I think Lynn and Larry and I were kind of like you said, you want to give it one more shot? And Fargo either suggested, you want to give it one more shot, kids? Or he went along with it, or something, okay?
No one else ever came to you and offered you anything after You was a hit? Nobody like, George Goldner didn't contact you or one of those record guys in New York?
He would have had to gone through our manager.
Okay.
Lou Fargo.
I wonder. Oh, that's another
deal. As opposed to our record company owner, Lou Fargo. Or maybe our publisher, Lou Fargo.
You know, okay. Wouldn't that be something if in the deep, dark caverns of Lou Fargo, we find out that, somebody offered something and he declined it? Wouldn't that have been something? I guess it doesn't really matter now, but
kind of doesn't. No. So, in other words,
it's the way I think. You know, this is how I think.
In other words, we made that last session.
Yeah.
Every Time and There's a Long Old Trail came out sometime in the fall of 60. Crazy for You and Wanted a Solid Gold Cadillac, or Solid Gold Cadillac, as it was supposed to be called, came out around June or July of 61. And when nothing happened with any of those, as far as airplay or, well, I learned about 5-6 years ago that Crazy for You made it onto Cashbox in the bubbling under the top 100 list at number 119.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we're not a one-hit wonder. We're a one-in-a-tenth hit wonder.
How a beautiful record like that doesn't get more airplay is beyond me.
But, you know, by that time, I mean, Lynn got married in November of 61. Okay, so that kind of took her out of the equation.
Sure.
And then Larry and I are both in college. I stayed on upstate New York for grad school. And, you know, it was just kind of, okay, we've done our best. It didn't work. It was fun. We didn't break up. I mean, gosh, we were all there at Lynn's wedding. We all sang. We all sang at Larry's wedding in June of 63. We all sang at Gene's wedding in Gene was February of 64. And I finally got all original and current members of the Aquatones to sing at my wedding last July.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Wow. And Larry got it on videotape.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Classic. Did you guys ever tour for the...
Not tour per se.
We just played some gigs?
We did gigs out of town, but we never, like, went on the road for a week.
Right.
You know?
You didn't do a caravan of stars or anything like that?
No, took a small airplane into a snowstorm in Iowa, nothing like that, no.
But you did play Bandstand.
We did Bandstand twice, yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did you?
And we Dick's Saturday Night Show out of New York, we did that. Did Alan Freed's TV show in New York.
Did you ever play Buddy Dean's show in Baltimore?
There's a story on that, too. Yes, we did.
Now, wait, you must have played that after you played Bandstand, because if you had played Buddy Dean first, Dick Clark wouldn't have let you on Bandstand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the in Baltimore, Buddy Dean was on the same time that Bandstand was on across the country. And so
that stupid programming. Why would anybody do that?
Well, because...
No, what happened was, it was right at July 4th, that year, 1958, July 4th was a Friday, July 5th was a Saturday, okay?
Yep.
We were on Buddy Dean the following Wednesday, for be the 9th, okay? The reason I know that is on Friday, July 4th, we were on a sock hop kind of a thing with a live band. There were two, you know, top 40 type acts there that we sang during intermission. Danny and the Juniors and us.
Wow.
The next night, Sailorsburg, five acts on the show, headlined by Bobby Darin. I don't remember all the other acts, but it included Danny and the Juniors and us. Okay? Following Wednesday, we go to Baltimore, we walk into the studio, who do we see sitting there? All together, boys and girls,
Danny and the Juniors!
So yes, I well remember doing Buddy Dean's show.
So how were Danny and the Juniors as guys?
you seem to
have gotten to know them quite well.
We didn't get to know them that, you know, we're all kids.
Yeah.
You know, we all had our own thing. I remember, and the guy is probably still alive and singing with them, so I'm not putting everybody down, but we all get a kick out of the fact that, well, I just won't mention his name, that way I'll get out of it, is that one of their guys was kind of hitting on Lynn at Sailorsburg. That didn't get anywhere, of course. But at any rate, I ran into Danny in Cohoes, New York, the summer of 1966, he had a new group of juniors, and he was playing at the bar, the first gig I had with the group I played with in grad school. And I got to talk to him on one of the breaks. Now, my recollection of Danny from 58 was he seemed a little bit stuck on himself.
Mm-hmm.
In 66, he was a real nice guy. Didn't remember us from a hole in the wall, but just as easy to talk to as anything. And it just really made me sad what wound up happening.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, poor guy. It's a sad end.
Well, you know, you asked me if I'd ever toured or wanted to become a rock star. That's one reason I'm glad I never followed that route.
Yeah.
I mean, I joke about the fact that I was a has-been at age 18. But at least it's a joke.
But you didn't give up the dream either, because you formed a new group called the Quarter Notes.
Well, I kind of got formed into it anyway, because the other two guys were local to the Albany area. And the guitar player called me up one time and asked me if I'd be interested in joining a band he was putting together. And I played a couple of gigs, and I was in grad school living on the princely sum of $200 a month from my fellowship. And I said, well, yeah, sure, I could do that. We wound up playing together darn near every weekend for 3 years.
That must have been fun.
It was great. I tell you what, and I'm not going to get into this, boys and girls, don't worry about it, but being in a band when you're 23, 24 years old and single, ooh, there's nothing like it.
And we'll leave it at that.
That's right, we will.
Has the song How Still the Night ever been played on the radio before?
I think so.
Oh, you're killing me, Dave. You're killing me here.
When
a DJ asks you that, you lie. You say no.
Never been played.
You're the first.
Nobody's ever heard. You're the first one in the world to ever receive that, Matt.
Excellent. Well, we're going to hear it right now. You with your... We're going to make history tonight, Dave.
There you go. Okay, Matt, I will assure you, it has never been played on satellite radio.
Ah, satellite radio. Okay.
There you go.
All right, so this is you with the Quarter Notes, your group after the Aquatones, doing a song called How Still the Night.